Hello, and thank you for tuning in to Answers from the Lab, where we share Mayo Clinic knowledge and advancements on the state of testing and science from laboratory leaders and the people who are making it happen behind the scenes. I'm Dr. Bobby Pritt, Chair of the Division of Clinical Microbiology at Mayo Clinic in Rochester, Minnesota. And with me today is Dr. Bill Maurice, the President and CEO of Mayo Clinic Laboratories. Hi, Bill. Welcome back.
Hi, Bobby.
You've been
good
traveling
to be back.
Quite a bit, right?
Yeah, I've been traveling, and this time again out of the country. So I've been traveling for quite a bit in the country. I think we talked about I was in Washington, D.C. for the American Clinical Laboratory Association annual meeting. But now I was just in Brazil visiting some labs and some hospitals and things down there. Opens your eyes into what's going on in the world. I know you've been talking with Dr. Binneker about measles outbreak in Europe and now in the U.S. There, I was surprised the hospitals are dealing with a surge in dengue virus cases to the point where they're having capacity issues in the hospitals because there's so many patients with dengue fever. And it's just something that we don't think a lot about. First of all, it makes you realize that these things continue to plague us around the world, number one, and really put stresses on the healthcare system. And number two, you know, something we'll want to keep an eye out for here. We don't think about that as being in North America, but I guess it's possible that we could be dealing with that here this summer.
Yeah, it is, Bill. And definitely we have the mosquitoes that transmit dengue virus. So I'm glad you brought that up. We have had locally acquired cases, but mostly through mosquito control, we were able to eliminate any disease areas within the U.S., but it's always a risk. The CDC actually just issued a level one warning for American travelers going to many different countries in Latin America, specifically for dengue.
Yeah.
So you're right. It really raises the awareness of what other countries are dealing with. And the fact that the hospitals were just very crowded and busy with cases just shows that this is a very serious disease. They actually have had 549 cases so far in Puerto Rico, and more than 340 were hospitalized. And that's just Puerto Rico. So it can be serious, even deadly infection.
Yeah, no, it made me think I wish I would have plugged their ABCs. I didn't have my mosquito repellent with me when I went down there. Luckily, I wasn't outside, so that was fine. But and then things continue to happen here as well. I know that last month there was a couple of articles in a single edition of New England Journal, which caught a lot of people's attention around cancer screening.
Yeah, let's transition to that. This will be a great topic because we're really covering the updates and what's going on in laboratory medicine and pathology. So those articles were quite interesting. Do you want to tell us a little bit about them? They all have to do with colon cancer screening.
Yeah, that's right. There were two. One, I think, was from Guardant Health, which has been working on a blood-based testing of cell-free DNA for colon cancer screening. And then Exact Sciences, actually, also in that same edition, an article that for the clinical trial for their they have a new version, I think, of their Cologuard stool-based screening test. Both caught a lot of attention because the Exact Sciences is even more accurate and sensitive and specific than their existing test. And then, of course, Guardant didn't perform quite as well, I don't think, in terms of, you might know the numbers better than me, but not quite as well, but still detected a significant number of cases. They're both really important studies, I think.
I agree. Cancer screening is very important, and this is specifically for colon cancer. And I'm sure everyone that's listening knows the conventional way is you'd get a colonoscopy, you'd have to take time off to work, you'd have to drink all that liquid, which was a strong laxative and not a fun experience for anyone who's done it. And so anything that's going to make it easier for people to get screened is a good thing. And we also know that cancer rates are going up across the country, especially among young people, which is quite interesting. So colon cancer is one of those cancers. It's obviously an important cancer. I was really interested in the cell-free DNA technology to detect colon cancer because it's just a blood draw. But you're right. It only detected about 80% of the colorectal cancer cases, and it didn't do very well in detecting those precancerous lesions that you really would want to detect and remove before they get to cancer. But regardless, it's a very promising technology that you can detect circulating tumor DNA circulating in the bloodstream.
Yeah, to your point, I've not delved into this, and it might be another interesting thing for us to talk about, but I've seen from many sources that the incidence of cancer is rising, particularly in patients under 50, earlier in adulthood, I guess is the best way to put it. And one of the reasons that you could say, why such a focus on colon cancer screening? And I think that's really twofold. Number one, we know that screening is effective and can detect early detection of colon cancer is key in terms of if you get it at an early stage, the outcomes tend to be very, very good, right? And number two, it's one that because of what you described, people just are not very compliant with screening. I remember when, because, you know, Cologuard and Exact Sciences was actually the intellectual content of that test was actually developed at Mayo Clinic by the late Dr. David Ahlquist, great guy. He was a gastroenterologist. And of course, a lot of the people in his profession were like, well, wait a second, we do endoscopies are good. They're an important part of our practice. If we do this, will patients not get as much endoscopy? And it really has not impacted because the reality is that I don't remember the precise numbers, but pretty low compliance with cancer screening by colonoscopy. So that's why there's such a focus on this. If we can find more convenient ways for patients to screen, we can really make a major impact in terms of detecting cancer before spread. And many of us, and myself included, have had personal experience with people who have passed away pretty early in life with colon cancer. So I think it's important. Interestingly, as part of that day, the debate there too is, I believe last year there was a push to get congressional bill passed to ensure that patients, these tests were covered by payers, and that did not pass. So there's still a lot of the science is advancing and the rationale to make it more available, but it's still going to have the same kind of, you know, regulatory and payment sort of hurdles that you and I have talked about a lot. You had to think about all of it, right?
Yeah, there's this issue of insurers paying for screening, which we would think is such an important aspect, so much easier and better to detect cancer before it occurs or spreads, but then also these new tests specifically not being covered. And some of these new methodologies like cell-free DNA that can cost upwards of $1,000, and then will it be covered by insurance? So on one hand, you have a technology like a simple blood draw detecting cell-free DNA or testing of stool, which may be easier and people may find it more acceptable and actually get screened. But then on the other hand, you have the fact that the cost of the tests may not yet be covered. So I think we're going to see this evolve over time, especially as these tests get better and better and are preferred over patients compared to the routine screening methods.
I agree. How can we help in the laboratory? Again, we tend to think a lot about validating tests and, you know, and making sure that they work, which is entirely appropriate and what we should be doing. But at the same time, we also have to think about the value that our tests create for patients and making sure that value is seen. Because on the one hand, yes, the new tests are more expensive than some of the traditional colon cancer screening tests, which are, you know, hemoglobin and stuff like that, which aren't very accurate. Flip side is, there's first of all the human impact, which is most important, and, you know, make preventing someone from having a fatal disease, but then also the healthcare costs, right? So if you start to say, if you think about the fact that if you catch more of these cases early, how much cost are we keeping out of the healthcare system? So yeah, $1,000 sounds like a lot per test, but when you think about the tens of thousands of dollars and the human impact of someone being diagnosed with late stage cancer, then all of a sudden the test doesn't look so expensive, right? So it's kind of, how do we make that argument again to payers, whether it's in the government and policy or with private payers, both? I think that's something we're going to have to continue to focus on as laboratorians, because we continue to push the science. We have to understand how the science is creating value for patients and be the voice of that. Because I can tell you, I've had conversations with people, and I'm sure you have too, through your role in CAP, mine through like with ACLA and others. It's, you know, that's not clear even to physicians that are in positions of making policy, how a test really links to value and how innovation in tests can really create values for healthcare and for patients. And so I think we have to continue to make sure that we make that point.
Yeah, we're part of the full ecosystem. We have to make sure that we're helping our patients and that we're working as part of the team, including the physicians that are going to be ordering these tests, educating them and making sure that our tests are adding value. Because we could also just get caught up in making improvements, which could lead to more expensive tests and perhaps don't have the human impact we would want.
Exactly. I think it's harder. I haven't been in those guys, but, you know, radiology, they're always introducing new machines that are more sensitive and pick up more things. And we just have to help create that context for people with labs. And even coming off of COVID, where we thought a lot of this would become more part of the common vernacular, it really hasn't. So we still got work to do.
Yep. We'll keep talking about these important new advances.
Yep. But it's exciting stuff. I mean, the reality is helping to screen patients for cancer in ways that are more convenient and can really help them. It's a very exciting, important development, I think.
Well, thanks again for a great discussion, Bill. I look forward to talking to you next week.
Yes, yes. And we'll keep talking and Well, I have to do a reminder on those ABCs, particularly if I go back to Latin America, to make sure I don't get dengue fever, because it doesn't sound
Yes,
like a
the
lot of fun.
ABCs of tick and mosquito-borne prevention. Why don't we just end with that? So
Yeah.
avoiding areas where ticks and mosquitoes can be, wearing a bug repellent, and covering up to prevent skin from getting exposed to areas where mosquitoes and ticks can bite. So
Yep.
yes,
So,
don't forget your ABCs.
yeah,
I
don't forget.
actually travel with little single-use insect repellent wipes, which you can get
Yes.
at your local grocery store and other places.
But next time I will. It has to be part of my travel kit. So,
That's right. All right, pal. Talk to you later.
yeah, it's always great catching up. Thanks.
Thank you so much for tuning in to Answers from the Lab. Be sure to subscribe to this podcast and don't forget to tune in every Thursday and every other Tuesday.